This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Part medical drama, part mystery story, the Fox TV series House has become a big hit with the help of its Tuesday night lead-in, American Idol. My guests are David Shore, the creator and executive producer of the series, and David Foster, a physician who left his work at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston to be a writer and medical consultant on House. House stars Hugh Laurie as a brilliant doctor whose job is to consult on the most mysterious cases at a teaching hospital in Princeton, New Jersey. The doctors and patients at the hospital pay a price for Dr. House's medical genius. They have to deal with his abrasive personality and condescending manner. As a result of a leg injury, Dr. House walks with a cane and is usually in pain, which only adds to his unpleasant disposition. Each episode starts with someone getting very sick with a life-threatening problem that is incorrectly diagnosed until House steps in. In this episode, a 12-year-old girl has had a seizure in the middle of a swimming competition. The doctors assume it's part of a larger outbreak of spinal meningitis. Here's Dr. House sharing his skepticism. The head doctor is played by Lisa Edelstein.
12-year-old female, fever, rash, neck pain. It's not meningitis.
Isn't the definition of meningitis?
Sure. Pus in the spinal canal makes it hurt to move your head up and down, but her neck only hurts moving side to side.
Oh, side to side.
Doesn't fit.
The three of you lobby now.
Those little pills you're passing out so efficiently aren't going to do Miss Luganis squat.
You just don't want to deal with the epidemic.
That's right. I'm subjecting a 12-year-old to a battery of dangerous and invasive tests to avoid being bored. Okay, maybe I would do that, but I'm not. If it turns out she's got meningitis, you're right, you win. But if we go back downstairs and she dies, your face will be so red.
You have 1 hour.
Get a lumbar puncture. Some brain infections can be pretty clever at hide and seek.
I'll get enough blood work.
No, you won't. You, sir, will research all the causes in the universe of neck pain.
The list is like 2 miles long.
We'll start with the letter A and put her on rifampin.
Rifampin is for meningitis. You just said,
in case I'm wrong, it has happened.
David Shore, Dr. David Foster, welcome to Fresh Air. David Shore, how did you describe the series when you were first pitching it?
It's a very different series now than what we initially pitched. We came in with just the basic procedural element of it. The character of Dr. House was not defined in any way, shape, or form. It much more closely resembled Law and Order or that kind of show, except with germs as the suspects and germs as the bad guys and investigating that news. It was pitched as a team of doctors who try and diagnose the undiagnosable cases. And to be honest, there was a bit of a bait and switch that went on, not intentionally, but as we were developing. So the networks went crazy for that. They thought it was great. We actually had a couple networks bidding on it. And it's a show. What I realized was when you're dealing with a procedural police drama, you've got all these motives. You've got all these people hiding things. Germs don't do that, obviously. You don't have one germ framing another germ because he was sleeping with the first germ's wife.
That would make an interesting series.
It would. If I could have done that, this show, that's what I would have done. But we couldn't. So we realized that, and it just makes it better, ultimately, is we realized, well, you can't just have a dry procedural in this environment. We have to make characters interesting. And I just started thinking about what sort of doctor would be interesting to watch, and it evolved from there.
Why did you decide a doctor who's really unpleasant would be interesting to watch? A doctor who's really rude to everybody, very condescending.
I did, actually. That's exactly what I decided. I just think, from my personal dealings with doctors, I just find that most of what they deal with is so mundane and so uninteresting that it's got to drive them crazy. And also, I think that most people would love their jobs a lot more if they didn't have to deal with people. We all view ourselves.
Not
as
me. I wouldn't have a job if I was.
That's a good point. But there are other people, I'm sure. We all view ourselves as being the brilliant people being surrounded by idiots on a certain level. We also all view ourselves as being hopelessly unqualified and fooling everybody. But I just thought it'd be really interesting to have a guy who just said those things and just wasn't afraid to say those things.
Now, the show follows a formula. The patient comes in. They're going to die within a few hours unless the doctors can diagnose the problem and fix it. The first diagnosis is always wrong. Then House leads the doctors in a discussion of what else they should be looking for. Let me play an example of House leading the doctors in a discussion of what else they should be looking for. So in this scene, you know, a patient has come in because of seizures. She's a teenage girl who's just come back from a swimming competition with the seizures. And the doctors have been assuming it's meningitis, but House has been skeptical. And so this scene will give you a sense about how he questions the other doctors and goes about making a diagnosis. They're near a men's room, I should say. Is there anything you want to add before we hear the scene?
Well, they're actually in a men's room, which, if I can just add something about it, one of the things I really love about this episode is it's so not your, I think it's not your typical medical drama episode in the sense that it's actually the opposite of it. We've got this meningitis epidemic in the hospital, which obviously would normally be the story in, I think, basically any other TV show about doctors. We've decided to make it the annoyance to House. There's this meningitis outbreak, and he's doing everything he can to avoid being involved in that because he's got one case of one person who's sick that's interesting, whereas meningitis bores him. And so they're doing the differential diagnosis in the men's room in this scene to avoid being caught doing this work.
Okay, let's hear the scene.
Are you sure it was an absence seizure?
Absolutely. She was totally unresponsive and unaware of what was going on around her.
Do you mind?
We're trying to work.
We should get back out there. Cuddy's going to be looking for us.
Looking but not finding. Did you do an EEG?
Seizure frequency is increasing. They're almost constant now, 5 in the last half hour.
Which tells us...
it's definitely in her brain.
And it's getting worse.
And?
Good Lord. Are you having a bowel movement or a baby?
Could be barbiturate withdrawal.
No, can't be drugs. She's tested at every meat she competes at.
A bleed in the brain could cause seizures.
Rat poison could also cause the neck pain.
You think she's eating off the floor of a false garage?
Doesn't have to be.
Who would poison a 12-year-old?
Well, let's see now. There's the 18-year-old has-been that she beat out to make nationals, the has-been's parents, jealous siblings, sociopathic swim fan, and then there's just your plain old garden variety whack job. Hey, you know what a hemorrhoid is?
No.
Well, Google it. Try some raisin bran instead of the donuts.
That's a scene from House, and my guests are David Shore, the creator of the series, and Dr. David Foster, a doctor who has been writing and consulting for the series. So where do you get the rare diseases from? Where do you find them? Do you go looking through rare medical books or through, medical sections of newspapers and magazines? You know, Dr. Foster, did you actually have cases like any of the ones on House?
Some of the cases are from my experiences and the experiences of some of the other doctors that we have working on the show. Some come from medical journals. Some come from the internet, friends at parties, doctors who I think we're always canvassing the doctors that we know for what their most interesting case was or what their most difficult problem that they had to solve was.
So, and their most and their most annoying patient as well.
Their most annoying.
Well, my favorite diagnosis, there was an episode where I think it was like a teenage boy, this was a few weeks ago, was sick, and everybody thought, oh, he's been poisoned or he's been exposed to some kind of toxic. And it turned out it was had to do with his exposure to termites in the wall of his home that no one even knew were there. No one even knew the home had termites. But Dr. House, figuring this out, actually goes... punches a hole in the wall, finds the termites.
Only after spitting on a surgeon to stop a surgery mid-process.
And autopsying the cat to find the termite in the cat's belly, the cat that died.
So who came up with this termite-related, I hope, rare illness?
That actually came out of a conversation between myself and one of the writers and a consultant from the CDC. We were actually calling about a different story, and the person said, you know, this is something that I find interesting. This was an interesting story to me, and we took it and ran with it.
So you figure out that the termites are going to cause this illness, but of course you have to misdiagnose it during the first scene. So then you have to figure out how to misdiagnose it in a convincing way.
Now, this is one of the ways that the to try and keep this interesting and not just have it be purely medical. We try and keep the personal aspects of it alive, and therefore, quite often the misdiagnosis comes from either an intentional or an unintentional lie from the patient or the patient's family.
Not only is House like a brilliant doctor and detective, you know, the Perry Mason of medicine. But he does everything himself. You know, he's given one woman a gynecological internal exam. He's done a pelvic ultrasound for another. Now, doctors never do ultrasounds. There's technicians who do ultrasounds. So, like, Dr. Foster, do you ever step in here and say, wait a minute, no one's going to buy this? Like, Dr. House isn't going to be doing these particular procedures.
Well, there's a line between usually does and could. I mean,
yes, he does. And I tell him he's going to do it anyways.
Why is he going to do it anyway?
Because it's more interesting to watch Dr. House do it than to watch some doctor we've never seen before do it. And again, I go back to the conceit of the show. And this may be somewhat of a rationalization, but we've created a character here who doesn't trust anybody. And so to a certain extent, we can get away with pushing the boundaries a little bit because he is so off the wall and he doesn't trust other doctors' tests. So his reaction is going to be, you do it, not somebody else. He wouldn't necessarily personally do it, but his team would do it.
Now, you know, we've talked about what a toxic personality he is and what a bad bedside manner he has. And you've mentioned that, you know, a lot of the stories, a lot of the misdiagnosis is based on lies that the patients or their families tell. Now, in the episode that we've heard clips from, this student who has been in a swimming competition has had seizures. Everybody's convinced it's part of this meningitis outbreak, except Dr. House. He thinks it's something else. And he finds out it is something else. And this something else is also related to the fact that she is pregnant and she hasn't told anybody and she certainly hasn't told her parents. So when he solves the problem and he realizes he's also going to have to perform an abortion to save her life, he can't tell the parents because she doesn't want the parents to know and he doesn't have the right to disclose it if she doesn't want them to know. So I want to play a scene where he's actually trying to describe the diagnosis and the procedure to the parents without actually having to tell them that she's pregnant. Here's the scene.
Your daughter has TTP. Don't worry, it's curable. She'll be fine.
Well, wait. I mean, what does TTP stand for?
Some really big words that you've never heard before, and when we're done, we'll never hear again. Have a nice day.
Well, when can we take her home?
In a few days. She needs some minor surgery to remove the underlying cause before we can do another really big word.
What's the underlying cause?
She has an abnormal growth in her abdomen.
What kind of surgery?
It's very simple. We do it here all the time.
Could you be a little more specific?
Actually, no. I'm sorry.
You, Laurie, the charming Dr. House in a scene from House. My guests are the creator, David Shore, and Dr. David Foster, who is a consultant and writer for the series. Can you talk a little bit about how the condescending, rude, insulting lines are written for Dr. House?
That's the greatest thing about writing for this show, I think, is writing for Hugh Laurie in particular, writing for this character and writing for Hugh Laurie, because he pulls off these amazing things and he can take these incredibly dramatic, incredibly serious scenes and you can write a joke in the middle of it. And he pulls it off and it doesn't lose any of its import and it becomes funny without becoming silly. And what we tend to do in writing the scenes and specifically writing the scenes is we write the scene dramatically first and then rewrite them to bring in the attitudes. Because the one thing I want to stay away from, we never want to make him nice, but we also don't want him to be nasty. I think the reason people are responding to him is because he's never nasty just for the sake of being nasty. He's clearly nasty, but there's always some reason for why he's doing it. There's always something he's trying to accomplish, whether it's as simple as learning something about the patient or learning something about the condition, but there's always a reason, or getting them to change their behavior. There's always a reason. And frankly, if we were to go with our guts, we would just write joke, 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 funny, 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 nasty, nasty, nasty. We've got to start with where he's going and what he's trying to achieve and work backwards from that.
You know, in a lot of procedurals, the program basically follows a formula, and you could set your watch by it. Like in Law and Order shows, you could basically know exactly what time the police are going to be done with the story and, you know, the DA is going to come in or the prosecutor is going to come in. And like in house, you could basically set your watch by what time the patient's going to be brought in, when they're going to be misdiagnosed, when the first breakthrough is going to be in the actual correct diagnosis, and so on. What are the advantages of writing a series that follows a formula?
There's something somewhat comforting about it. The challenge is keeping it, you know, the disadvantages are obvious. I mean, when you describe it that way, it sounds terrible, but I can't argue with it too much. We try and mix it up every now and again. We did one a few weeks ago where at the end of, by the end of Act 2, we knew exactly what was wrong with the person. It was just a question of what's going to happen to them. So we do try and mix it up, but it is the nature of storytelling. It just becomes more obvious in a situation like this that you have a formula going on. But it is comforting. The audience likes to play along. It's a game. It's the audience playing along with the game. The game happens to be exactly 44 minutes long or whatever it is, an hour with commercials. But it is something that people feel used to and comfortable with. And if they like the way it's being told, I think they're going to continue to like it as long as it continues to be smart and continues to – you don't know why. You know something's going to go wrong, but you don't know what's going to go wrong.
I think one of the things that both crime shows and medical shows are doing is pushing the kind of language and descriptions of the body that you're likely to hear on television. Let's face it, you know, Law and Order, SVU, Special Victims Unit, since just about everybody on the show is like a rape victim, there's often some pretty explicit descriptions of the evidence. And you know, on House, there's been some pretty explicit descriptions too. Do you find that interesting? The way crime shows and medical shows are seem to be pushing the boundaries a little bit of prime time broadcast television.
I do. It's interesting. I mean, in terms of, I think it's very true that that's happening, and I think to some extent it's just keeping up with the special effects you see on TV, which we use to some extent, and a lot of other shows are using it. If you graphically show something, it's very difficult to not graphically describe it. And I also think it's just the natural progression of the audience is becoming savvier and savvier and dealing with the realities of the situation. To water down a description, you just lose something. You lose something very, very major when you water down a description. And if the show's at all dealing with the fundamentals of it, but practically for our show, it's actually very tricky because we've created this character who's bread and butter is, in a sense, saying the unsayable. And that is the exact opposite of what network instincts are. Network instincts are to not shock people. And
especially right now.
yes, very true.
So who do you have to pass the dialogue through now before it can get on the air when House is saying the unsayable or when describing something explicit with the body?
Yeah, they have a standards and practices department at Fox that deals with it. Obviously, certain obscenities all obscenities are verboten, and it's more dealing with, like in the episode you've played some clips from. There was a rather graphic line where he is trying to convince her to talk to her parents, and he's very, very strong about it. And I think the line was something along the line, if I can say it, it was, "You're old enough to bleed out of your vagina. Old enough means you're old enough to make your own decisions." And old enough to do whatever you want. And he's obviously trying to make a point to her to say, you're a 12-year-old kid. You've got a lot of growing up to do. If he were to hold her hand and say, you're a 12-year-old kid, you've got some growing up to do, it wouldn't have the same impact. And it was an issue. The very issue of having a 12-year-old pregnant girl on TV was a real issue. And, you know, you've got to choose which battles you fight, and we won that battle.
What did you say to win it?
We said exactly what we've just described here, which is that that's the whole point of this episode. The whole point of this character and the whole point of this episode is this kid is a kid. We are not endorsing that sort of activity for 12-year-olds. We're doing the exact opposite. We are actually talking about how a 12-year-old is a 12-year-old. A 12-year-old is a child. And that is what makes it – that is exactly what they're objecting to, is the shocking nature of it. But the shocking nature of it comes from the fact that she is a child and she is experiencing these adult experiences before she's ready to experience them.
David Shore, Dr. David Foster, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Terry.
David Shore is the creator and executive producer of House. Dr. David Foster is a medical consultant and writer on the show. The season finale is next Tuesday night.